Collins. Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, July 11th. We are at Vets Hall, and this is a special meeting of the Citizens Advisory Committee for the Water Reclamation Facility. Thank you in advance for your attendance, participation, and interest. And I will note that we have a quorum present, 5 of 9 members. Absentees would be Dale Guerrera, John Diodati, and Ann Fullerton. Thank you. Sorry. And we are accepting Jenny Gorelick's resignation. We're very sorry to see her leave. She has agreed to continue to research with her contacts, et cetera, at EPA, research grants, and provide any information she comes across. So for that, we are grateful, as well as her participation for the last 3.5 years. So we have a quorum present. I'll call this meeting to order. We'll have a quick moment of silence. And let's all rise for the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll start with any brief announcements from the WRFCAC. Steve, do you have anything to... Paul? Valerie?
I do have an announcement. I'm sorry.
Get it real close.
It's in regard to the community emergency response training.
You can bring it closer.
This is in regards to the community emergency response training, and this training is in the event of a large-scale disaster that should happen in our community. It's sponsored by the Slo County Fire Chiefs Association and the Slo County Sheriff's Advisory Foundation. This is a hands-on training, and it's going to be at the Morro Bay Fire Department 5 evenings, Tuesday and Thursday, and the first class is January the 16th. There is a $40 materials fee. You can mail your check in to the fire department, or you can go down to the fire department and sign up there. I went down this week, and there's still about 5-6 spaces still available. So anyway, it's I think this is a great opportunity. I think there's been about 1,200 people in San Luis Obispo County who have taken this training. And so anyway, just thought you might be interested.
Thank you, Val. Richard?
No.
Thank you. And I have none as well. So welcome, staff. Welcome, audience. I will open it up for public comment for any item not on the agenda. The agenda only has one item, the review of the RFP. But if you have anything else you would like to comment on, please make sure you sign in. It really makes it easier for our notes. Is there a pen up there, Jean?
Yes,
there's a pen up there.
But
thank you.
Hi, I'm Carol Truesdale. I've been here since 1995 and homeowner. Thank you again for all the work that you and the staff have done. Mr. Leivick, I have a question for you on the spill last week. The spill, you know, the circle. How did that person get and open up that valve? Aren't they supposed to be locked?
So that valve was in the Caltrans right-of-way, and it was a... I believe it was a below-ground valve with a valve tee on it. Caltrans mm-hmm. was trying to get their irrigation system working again, so they were operating all the valves that they could find to open it up. It would be impossible to lock that valve out. We put labeling on that valve so that Caltrans knows that they're not supposed to operate that valve.
Also, another thing I was going to ask you, it must have cost the city a lot of money to have everybody troubleshooting and calling an on-site. Are you going to go after Caltrans for remuneration for that time and money?
We'll work with our city attorney and see if there's any cause for that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the update, Rob. All right, we have nothing on the consent calendar, so that brings us... Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were just wandering in.
Yeah. No. Just wandering.
I should have known you'd be. That's good.
Bart Beckman, Morro Bay. I don't have any specific comments on the request for proposal. My first comment, though, is that I would love for you to not accept Jenny's resignation. I think she sent a loud message to everyone, particularly the council, that we needed some new eyes. That message, coupled with others, was heeded, and so we're on the path to get new eyes, and I would argue new ears as well. The two comments I'd like to make that I think need to be addressed, and I feel you need to answer before you move forward, and that's first on the statement of qualifications. I looked at it. I've been saying $85 million. There's a requirement for two $80 million jobs. Now, I don't know what else is in there. I believe you should try to make sure you understand why you didn't get other bids. It makes no sense to me. You did get a PERC bid, sort of, kind of, and they were scoffed at rather than pursued as to why they didn't bid, as well as the other people. I believe you need to know that. And why didn't, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Filnaunch or something like that. I guess it's French. Why, when they are building and have the major part of the contract at Cayucas, why do they need Black & Veatch? And legally, was Black & Veatch, should they have been allowed to bid anyway? I would suggest that it looks like Vilnanch thought, Black & Veatch knows people who are going to be doing the evaluation. I'll team up with them. Just saying, it's an observation. But you need to know why those people didn't bid. Secondly, there is an estimate of somewhere between $89 and $100 million within the $150. So if you add the contingency that I'm sure is in the $150 on top of the $89, you add escalation, which they admit is not there, you're getting close to $100 million. Cayucas built a plant for $19 million. It's about half the flow of ours. You need to be able to explain to yourselves and to the community, why can Cayucas build a plant for 19 and the people who have been managing this say it's going to take 100 million? 19 with economies of scale gets you less than 40, but let's say 40. I believe you need to have an answer to that, that you can look in the mirror yourselves and say, that makes sense. My 98-year-old mother, who happens to live at Casa de Flores, she got it. 40 million, 100 million. 40 million, 100 million. When you can answer that, then I would suggest you can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. I can make one comment. I don't think I have an option not to accept someone's resignation once they resign, and I've personally spoken to her. I'll be glad to reach out to her again, but I'm afraid if I were not to accept that resignation, we would not be able to fill the appointment with another qualified candidate, so I'll just leave it go at that. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. Kerrigan Mahan, Morro Bay resident. I just want to basically suggest, as did Richard Sadowski at the last meeting, I really think this has reached a point of numbers are being thrown around, millions and millions of dollars like silly putty. I think there should be a full work stoppage and no more money spent on anything. I think it's convoluted. I think it's out of control. I think it's irresponsible. Nobody knows what's going on. It changes all the time. We're getting $1.5 million for a pump station report. Again, we're not ready for any of this. This is out of control. It's out of control. It needs to be stopped and revisited and started over. And certain parties need to be terminated. We have nothing. We have no project. And we've spent millions and millions and millions of dollars. So I would like, if at all possible, to see Richard make the same motion he attempted last week to stop the spending right now, and let's figure out what we're doing or not doing. And in the meantime, let's have Joe give everybody a tour of the old plant and see what exactly has to occur to keep it and stay right there for conceivably the next 10 to 15 years for maybe 20, 25 million bucks. As to the WIFI loan, what's that based on, 82 million? That's why the WIFI loan we're chasing on an $82 million plant. The WIFI loan can be used for all kinds of things, by the way. We got all kinds of problems we got to fix. This plant should just be stopped. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Anyone else for public comment? Thank you. Close public comment. And now we are ready to move on to item B1, the draft RFP for the WRF on-site improvements. I understand we have a short and brief presentation. Is that Rob or Joe?
Yeah, I'll lead us through it. We'll bring MKN up to the podium as needed to answer questions. So the purpose of this is to provide staff with input on the draft RFP, general comments, recommendations for City Council, and we invite detailed comments to be submitted to staff for review and incorporation into the document. So the schedule for the RFP is to receive these comments here, to bring it to a City Council study session on January 17th. And then January 23rd, we're looking for City Council to review and release the RFP for the four parties that submitted SOQs to prepare their proposals to construct the facility. The focus areas that we're going to look at today is the evaluation criteria, allowance for environmental and escalation, and then submittal requirements. So first we'll start with evaluation criteria, and what we'll do is probably stop, have some discussion at these various topics, and then before we move on to the next topic. So the evaluation criteria, we have in the draft RFP have a number of items with a possible score. What we would do is invite the WRFCAC to review that scoring and provide input to staff if you think it's appropriate. Maybe a way to run through this would be to look at the order them in highest to lowest importance or lowest to highest importance, and after that then look at how they should be scored. So turn it back to the chair for discussion.
Do you know what page that's on in this? Oh, I thought it was in the beginning.
It's a little table with the heading Proposal Evaluation Criteria in yellow at the top.
It's in the handout.
Oh, okay. I know, but I went through, okay, did my homework,
sorry,
Rob, and I marked it up, so that's why I'm trying to find it.
Okay.
Thank you. That's okay. You know, maybe before we get started, can you go over a little high level of the organization of the RFP? I was a little bit confused. I didn't see the project description right up there, and it looks like some of these attachments will not be provided to the when you send it out. Is it just they said draft, et cetera? Or is
no, all these attachments will be provided to the as part of the RFQ package,
okay,
so or RFP package. too many acronyms.
You'd be filling in the blanks, like the ones with the liquidated damages and some of these other...
Yes, we're working with the city attorney on some of those blank areas.
Okay. All right, go ahead. I'll figure it out. Thank you.
Okay. So maybe we can go through a little bit of definitions first. So management approach is we're looking for understanding of project goals, the understandings of the challenges and the proposed mitigation strategies, risk and mitigation strategies, unique approaches, strengths, resources of the team and the individual members, and management strategies for sub-consultants and subcontractors. I'm just going to run through the categories first, and then we can revisit
we can
these slides
about,
as needed if we need to go back. QAQC, QC, quality control, ensures compliance with standards for materials and workmanship. An example of that would be the specifications that you provide for construction. It ensures facility performs according to the design and consists of observation techniques, activities, and tests, soil testing, material testing, inspection of welds, and so forth. QA, quality assurance, ensures that activities meet those quality requirements and they are fulfilled, provides confidence in the quality requirements will be met. Examples of this are document control, permit management, ensuring materials are approved. So the procedures that are used in that quality control. In evaluating quality assurance and quality control, we're looking for their overall approach for designing construction, their proposed process and tools that they will be using, their reporting relationships, a commitment to safety and innovations that enhance safety, and examples and various safety plans that they will be submitting as part of the RFP. Proposal. The next one is schedule and cost control. So we'll be looking for evaluating their budget and control and reporting. Their management of the and control of the change order process. Their risk management process. Cash flow reporting and bases, plan for tracking and correctly billing of state and federal loans and grants, document control system, ensuring compatibility with the city's Procore system. So the city has a construction management piece of software that we use, and we want the contractor to submit their invoices through that, all their RFIs through that to make sure that there is good tracking. Team and city collaboration, their approach to creating this collaborative environment, ideas and innovations that enhance and foster collaboration, and their conflict resolution approach. The next evaluation criteria would be design, development, and management. Looking at their design management approach, identifying challenges in the design development and how they will address those, identifying challenges in schedule and, again, methods to address, tools that they will use to coordinate and make sure that work occurs in the right order, their assumptions and constraints to the proposed schedule. The sequencing and scheduling, that specific item, we'll be looking at key milestones and specific details, their list of assumptions, their ability to meet the completion date and to promote efficiency, perhaps finish sooner, what is their approach to scheduling and sequencing, and to identify any challenges in the schedule and what their methods to address those challenges would be. In the technical proposal, the design basically is we'll be evaluating their proposed process diagram, hydraulic profiles, and electrical diagrams, their facility process and equipment capacities, including effluent and influent quality, major equipment and, for each of the systems, looking at their site plan and equipment layouts, and their performance guarantees. In the price proposal and life cycle costs, maybe the most important to some, what is their guaranteed maximum price? What do they estimate for power consumption and energy costs, chemical consumption and costs, O&M, and total life cycle costs? So that's walked our way through the various criterion that we would be using to evaluate the proposal, and now I think we want to have a little bit of discussion on how the WRFCAC feels about the criterion and the possible score in the rating matrix.
Okay, thank you, Rob. I'll open it up for discussion, and if anybody's following along in the book, I did find it's on section 2-4.
Can I go ahead?
Go ahead, please.
I'm a little confused with this proposal evaluation, and I was always under the assumption the cost is going to be those first six or seven, it was about eight items, would be the minimum qualifications to even bid on the project, and the last one is the one that you actually go with is the price. It was our assumption that the four bidders were qualified to do the work, and you make that a qualification that they meet all those other things to your standards, and the price comes down at the end of the day is 100% of the overall evaluation. And I've never done a design build project in my life, even though I'm a civil. I've done design bid builds, you know, till the cows come home. I'm losing the fact. This almost feels like a professional type of RFP where cost isn't the overall consideration. But I thought when you got into the construction phase side of it, it is. And since they're tied together, I could kind of appreciate, but it seems to me those first seven or so items, they have to meet a minimum standard that you set up, and then the price becomes the end-all at the end of the day. And I guess that's a question to you, Rob. I wasn't quite sure.
So with design builds, we're following the Public Contracts Code section for general law cities.
And I don't know it, so.
Design build. And life cycle costs and total project costs, or fixed guaranteed maximum price, are the required components in that proposal, along with a few other items. So the law does not give definite requirements that you have to select on lowest price with design build, because it's a blend of professional services and contract. In effect, you do select on by your weighting criteria.
Mm-hmm.
I would suspect that unless you had the lowest guaranteed maximum price and the lowest life cycle cost, you probably can't compete on the rest of the items and win out on a design build project.
But I guess the question in my mind is, in reading this RFP and going through the requirements, you've concisely tied down exactly what you wanted. I mean, to the thickness of the walls of the basins and everything else. I mean, it's tied down to the gnat's eyelash as I read it. And it would seem to me if that person's bringing in the product that you're calling out, and I always thought design build was more performance you know, meeting certain performance criteria that you expect of the effluent. I was a little confused. You've got to tie down exactly what you want, and that's what they have to meet, regardless of the rest of that. Now, most of these where you talk about tying into your management system, the Procor, and all these kind of things, it would seem to me that's, you wouldn't accept their bid if they're not willing to work on that basis. I'm missing something, and that's the part. And don't get me wrong, Rob, I haven't done this before, so I, you know, I'm talking as just another citizen in town.
Yeah, I understand. You know, design build is fairly new in California, especially for general law cities doing water and wastewater projects. Like I said, in my opinion, it's going to come down to guaranteed maximum price and life cycle costs.
Yeah, and I would too. I would think it would be 89% or, you know, 90% of this thing. But I would almost think if they didn't meet the minimum standards for you in the first seven, you wouldn't even accept the bid. Do you follow what I mean? You said if somebody comes in, they're not giving it to you in the format you've requested, why would you even entertain putting them in the bid group? Does that make sense?
I guess we're giving them flexibility on some of these items to come up with their methodology for their management approach.
Oh, okay.
For example, how do they propose to do it rather than how being draconian from the city standpoint and specifying what their management approach is. We're allowing some innovation in that. At the end of the day, because we have rated the technical proposal and the price proposal
It's the largest. I will agree with you that. The only thing that bothers me is if they score perfectly all the way up top and they're twice the price of the lowest bidder, based on your evaluation criteria, you'd be going with someone who's twice the cost. And that's the part that I can't wrap my head around, so
to
speak.
I think that's why we're talking about this
item right now. And that's why I brought it up.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So that we can take, you know, your input and blend that into the evaluation criteria that we're looking at to give us the best product.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, on your first criteria on the management approach, on that slide you talk about unique approaches, strengths, resources of team and members, and I seem to recall from the qualification statements that not all these team members between the design firm and the construction firm actually worked together before in some of these. Yet this highest score you can get on that item is 5, so if we even gave somebody a 0, it wouldn't make or break the final score on this. Seems to me we should put more emphasis on that team having performed together in some fashion so that they're not rehearsing on our job, that they know what they're doing. I mean, I don't know how the rest of the committee feels, but it seems like that should have more weight on that first item than 5.
Val, do you want to comment? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Do you want to answer that?
You're
open for our suggestions.
We're open for your suggestions. I think that's a valid argument, and if that's the kind of when we come back around and come up with kind of a concise, you know, overall recommendation from the committee, if that moves forward, I think that makes sense.
Obviously, we'd have to take it from something else. I don't know what that might be, but it just seems to me that the lowest rating you can give on all these items was for that management team itself. And it seems to me that we need to have a stronger team having performed together on a really good project that we feel safe, that these people know what they're doing when they hit the street.
And keep in mind, maybe we kept the math easy, keeping it at 5s, 10s, 15s, and 20s. We don't have to follow that strategy. I would probably avoid anything, you know, fractional amounts, but whole numbers, we can, if we believe that is, for example, should be 7, you know, we can maybe management approach and city team collaboration integration are kind of the same. Take it from that one. Just a suggestion.
Bell, do you have any comments?
My understanding from the RFQ is that it basically provided information to show that they have conducted their work and that they have personnel and the resources to design and to build this particular project. And so when I look at these various categories, the first seven that you're talking about, for me, how I interpret it is that they're taking those seven categories and they're being more explicit about how they're going to manage, schedule, and build our project. So more project specific to Morro Bay. And one of the things that I noticed in going through the RFP, just kind of as a general observation, is that the RFP did provides opportunities for the DBE to review the city's proposed WRF design assumptions. And from my observations, the DBE is asked to review those assumptions, and they're encouraged to provide alternative solutions along with documenting their assumptions. And I'm going to give this to the city, but I found at least three different sections where they're asking the DBE to look at what the city is recommending and their plant design, et cetera, in Section 1 under general information, the performance criteria report, and in the sample proposal forms. So I see throughout this RFP this soliciting from them, look at what we're proposing, can you come up with something better? That's what I'm reading in between the lines. So that's my take on it.
Yes, we're allowing for other approaches other than the one that was specified, and as long as it meets the criterion, the performance criterion, we'd be willing to evaluate those and look at those.
Thank you, Bill. Rob, a couple comments. That's why I was asking about the numbers. When I look at the price proposal and the schedule and cost controls as it stands here, that's 35 points, you know, slightly over a third. And I think those two components are very important. I would ensure that those two add up to more than 50%. And I would go with all the other things, like something very minimal, 6, 7, 8%. Like I had difficulty with quality control. It just seems like that's important, but you build something and it should be compliant, and it's a yes or no, like kind of like follow up with Steve's comment, it's there or it's not. So I would take all those and drop them down to a total of a 42 or 48%, and then make the other two a significant as a suggestion. So Richard,
could we get Mike Nunley up here? I got a couple questions for him on this.
Good afternoon. Well,
can you describe, in your words, this what the project description is on this RFP?
The project.
Does it include the lift station? Includes all the piping, all the
easement? No lift station. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It includes all the work within the site of the WRF, so within that property.
Okay. And in your opinion, by separating the lift station, the sewer easements that are going to have to be acquired, the piping to getting the sewage there, is within CEQA guidelines for the project, and you're not piecemealing it?
They're all covered under the environmental impact report. So the full project, including the work in this RFP, and also the work that's currently being designed by Waterworks engineers, all the pipelines, it's all being handled as one, quote, project under CEQA.
It is covered as one project under CEQA.
Yes, sir.
So when we're looking at this RFP, all we're looking at is the on-site.
That's okay?
And so when we're looking at the integration of the lift station and all that, that is going to be under your jurisdiction?
So the city is has issued a SCADA master plan RFP separately.
SCADA is a warning system for collection system emergencies.
It's supervisory control and data acquisition. So it's also controls. So it's also it also handles, it, as you know, how the lift station communicates with the plant, the signals that occur back and forth.
Okay.
The overall integration is going to be handled by the city and the construction management team in an oversight role, but the design builder is responsible for the coordination with that lift station contractor, or the pipeline contractor, to make sure that where the pipeline meets up, that the design builder picks up that pipeline and finishes the rest of the work on the site. The overall, the SCADA integration, so the SCADA master plan will address control integration between the lift station and the plant site as a whole, and it will also provide the direction for the contractor to follow in the equipment they provide for SCADA. So it's there are a few different modes of coordination between those.
So when we're looking at this, we're assuming that these guys that are bidding are going to have knowledge or are working with some other contractors that are doing the force main, which is another contractor that's doing the lift station.
And what we have done is we've provided a discussion in various sections of the document on the type of coordination that's to take place between those different contractors.
Okay. And okay, that's enough for now.
Mike, can you confirm? I thought it was somewhere buried in here that this RFP is just for that WRF site, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
I'm sorry.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I do have a question about SCADA, and when I read... Oh, excuse me. When I read the RFP that the city has released for the SCADA system, what I was wondering about is the fact that the RFP doesn't discuss the location, the potential location of the new lift station, and it does not discuss the location of the proposed WRF. And so I know that this is a master plan that includes existing as well as supposedly for our new plant. But I didn't see anything in the RFP that specifically directed the contractor who was developing the SCADA master plan in regards to information about the new plant. Maybe I overlooked it and it was buried someplace. And how does that all work?
Yeah, and that really wasn't discussed. But what was discussed in the SCADA master plan is really overall when they start doing the work. Overall, what facilities are there and how they can got to communicate with each other. So the SCADA master plan isn't designed as a plan to actually write the control strategies. It's designed to basically have the same type of equipment, set our standards, what type of equipment we're going to have throughout the city. So it's more of an overall plan, and then the design builder will basically be responsible for the control strategies, the integrator at that point.
Okay, that was my question, too, is that if the design build team would be then responsible for taking the next step.
Yeah, and as we get further on down the road with the SCADA master plan, we will be, you know, visiting all the sites and they will be covered, but it was just more of a high-level type planning effort at this point.
Okay.
So, to ask, with the SCADA, that hasn't been started design on or let out or anything else. It's purely, it's coming along the way. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. So the big thing with what we got to remember with SCADA and any plant, be it a package plant system or while we're building a design build, every manufacturer of these individual pieces have their own control strategies with them. And what we're really talking about is integrating all those pieces into one so they all communicate and talk to each other. So we need a document that basically sets our standard right away of what type of hardware and software we're using so everything can communicate seamlessly.
But what you're, this RFP does not include the SCADA. I assume it's going to be located on the site at South Bay Boulevard. I mean the main control board. And then you have the pieces out at the lift station and other places along the way. And that's a completely separate contract of this. I just want to get it clear in my mind.
It doesn't supply any equipment. It is just a plan. It actually will spell out, you know, what type of equipment that that would be recommended or equal. The type of redundancy that we'd need, Department of Homeland Security requirements for securing the system. It will actually spell out the minimum standards that we're going to impart throughout the whole
city. But this RFP is not including the construction of it.
It does not.
Oh, okay. That's what I was trying to get
clear. It's more of just a high-level planning effort.
Right. Okay.
Let me clarify that.
Okay.
The RFP for SCADA master planning doesn't include construction. It's the overview for how we want the SCADA logic controls equipment specs. This RFP for design build will require them to supply the equipment and follow.
Oh, okay, so they are going to physically
construct
as part of this. That's what I was trying to get clear on.
SCADA master plan
that
parameters
you're preparing.
That we're preparing right now.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Real quick, I just wanted to follow up something that Richard brought up about CEQA and piecemealing. I know there's a lot of activity going on right now. There's some boring going down on the Embarcadero, and it seems like there's a lot of activity going on without any environmental determination. When you do the borings, in my past experience, is that sometimes you could disturb cultural resources that would have been identified in your EIR. There's no coordination as far as watching what cultural resources may be affected by the activity that's occurring right now. There's actually work going on. It seems to me that we need to have our environmental documentation telling us what mitigations need to be in place before they do activities. So I don't know if things are being done at jumping the gun on that or what.
From my experience, typically you need to do geotechnical investigations to inform the environmental document. We have standard requirements for if they're encountered cultural resources during these activities that they stop work and inform the city.
Does the current project description include the work that's going down the Embarcadero right now and up Pacific Street?
That is for alignment evaluation, so to evaluate the subsurface geotechnical parameters to determine whether that's a viable route for the pipeline.
What would determine it to not be viable in the exploratory work they're doing right now?
I think on the Embarcadero, whether they encounter revetment rock where at the elevations that the force main would be at would be, we don't want to be digging through the revetment to put in a force main.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Rob, are you looking for us to give you a template? I mean, I can send you what I think it ought to be, but
Either we can have, for example, the your general comment like cost and cost control should equal more than 50% of the work, and we can adjust based on that, or we would be happy to take individual values on that. It's at the pleasure of the chair and the board.
What I have is 34% price proposal, because that's, you know, a decimal point over a third, and then I'd put 20% schedule and cost control. That's 54% total, and the rest I kind of divvied up, although I gave a little more to technical proposal and management approach, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12, so I can send you that, or I'm open to comments from my colleagues as well, but I think those two components have to weigh heavily.
I would agree.
No, for me, quite frankly, in the evaluation, I would take the top six or seven as a pass or fail, and then it's based on cost. I'm sorry. At the end of the day, for me, this is a cost consideration, because I think the people you've lined up can build this plant probably standing on their heads. I mean, they've done these plants before, and they've demonstrated they've had these plants before. I'd just rather see it come in at the lowest cost that it could come in at.
Almost like minimum requirements. They don't meet them, they don't bid, and then the rest are, you know, that's all you weigh on. Is that consistent with your two-step process?
Yes.
Public law and blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Just a comment on the pass-fail. I would hate to have us fail somebody that had a fairly low price proposal. Just maybe we could work with them on their, I don't know, management approach. Maybe it's not optimal, but maybe it's workable.
So what you're saying is you'd go back and tell them they need to up their game in a certain manner if they're indeed the lowest bidder. I always use responsible bidder.
Yeah.
And to me, responsible is you meet the criteria of those first six or seven.
So I would get, in my opinion, for example, management approach, rather than pass-fail, they may score a fairly low on it, but they have a fairly high score on their price proposal. But their management approach, while low, is something that would be workable.
Following this evaluation, you're not necessarily saying you are the bidder, is what I'm hearing. You're saying you'll go back to them and try and up that particular section because they didn't meet your requirements for it. Is that what I'm...
No, what I'm saying is if you put, for example, management approach pass-fail, and they have a poor management approach, or what we wouldn't consider optimal,
right,
but a low price proposal, do we necessarily want to kick them out if their management approach may not be optimal, but it's something we could work with?
Well, that's why I'm saying, it seems to me, at the end of the day, you go with what I call the lowest responsible bidder. And the responsible bidder meets those other criteria, or you work with them to meet the requirement to your standard.
Okay, maybe we're saying the same thing
in a different way. I read this as you go through these numbers, and at the end of the day, that's who you're going to allot it to based on number of points to 100. And if that's not the case, that's kind of what I'd like to hear.
That is the case.
Okay.
You would base it on their total score. And how they rate up against each other.
But you'd allow them to change what they submit to bring it up in a certain area.
If that's what you understand, that's not what I meant to say.
Okay.
What I meant to say is, just using numbers as an example, if somebody submitted a proposal that had a total cost and they scored 20 on that.
Yeah.
But only scored a 2 on their management approach.
Right.
You would need to look at their management approach. Although it's not optimal, is it something that we could work with if their overall score was the highest score? I don't want to... If it were a 2 and it was a pass-fail, we would kick them out and not even look at their cost proposal.
Okay.
So that's why I think you and rather than making it a pass-fail and kicking them out, you score them. And if cost, schedule, and cost control is the most important criteria, use the chair's example of making that the highest percentage of the score.
I thought it should have been 90 or, you know, or you they're not even qualified as a bidder if they don't meet those other standards. That's my thought. Thank you.
But I think the way Rob's suggesting it is there could be two proposals that are very close in price, and you're using these other criteria, maybe softer criteria, to still try to be objective. And because I suspect you may have to debrief any non-winners or...
Yes, you know, typically you do.
So you want to give them some constructive, positive feedback, and you don't want to say, gee, you missed it by $100, so you're gone.
You missed it by $100, plus you had a poor management approach.
Right, so you would have a little more. So I think these are, anybody that's considered responsive would probably pass in all these other six categories, but we want to have a way perhaps to grade them, if that's
correct.
The correct term.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Paul.
Unlike a design bid build, our selection here is not based upon the lowest responsible bid price, correct?
It doesn't have to be. It can be.
Now, if it were a contract with a consultant, we would negotiate the cost. We would not determine their selection based upon cost alone.
Correct.
Is that similar here, or is there sort of a mix between the two, or what is it?
My interpretation is more of a mix between the two. You have to consider cost and life cycle cost in the proposal. The law doesn't say that you have to base the selection on that.
So I'm clear here. The way we have this set up, we're going to need three permits from different agencies, correct? We're going to need a permit for the WRF. We're going to need a permit for the lift station, and we're going to need a permit for the Forest Main, correct?
Perhaps the permit for the lift station and Forest Main could be combined in one permit.
Okay.
So at least two permits, the way I see it, two land use or entitlement permits. So the city would be issuing a permit for the lift station Forest Mains. The county would be issuing a permit for the wharf facility itself. We would use the same environmental document to satisfy that requirement for both of those permits.
Okay, so basically, so I'm clear, the city is going to be doing the work for the lift station and the Forest Main, correct, as far as the permit goes?
The city is the permitting, is the land use authority. So,
okay, so that's the land use authority. And so, okay, so as you know, here, as a citizen, we're paying the staff in the city to work and be a lead on the lift station and the Forest Main for that permit. And as a citizen of Morro Bay, we're also now letting the county take over and do all the permitting for the WRF. Is that correct?
Yes, because the WRF site is within the outside the city limits and in the county.
Right. Okay. So, but we're paying for that. That work is going to be paid by the citizens of Morro Bay through this project, right? All that county permitting.
Permitting process. Work. Yes, if they charge us a fee.
What do you mean? If?
There's no requirement that that government agencies charge each other for land use permitting.
Well, speaking of land use, I'm on the Planning Commission, and we have yet to review the land use of the lift station area. So, I mean, that's a big question mark right now.
Are we ready to open up for public comment on this item?
Yeah, that probably would be the best way to handle it, is to take
some of us still may have some other comments in
here,
okay? But while we're on this topic, let's try to...
Perfect.
Yeah, okay. So I'll open it up for public comment. Please come forward, scroll your name real quickly on the board, and we'll be happy to listen to you. Welcome.
Thank you. Jeff Heller. Scroll this on here.
Okay, good.
I think it would be a mistake for the city to issue this RFP. And I just want to briefly tell you why. First of all, I think that the process for selecting the contractors, the design build teams, just by the results of those four huge companies, indicates flaws with the RFQ, the request for qualifications. And I've looked at those very closely. The requirements about $280 million sewer plants obviously is an issue, which I think eliminates a lot of people. I think the insurance requirements are probably overly stringent for a project like this. And I think the documents themselves are flawed enough so that It's going to be very difficult for a small contractor who's busy installing sewer plants is going to even take the time to bid it. So I consider that list of four to be faulty. And issuing the RFP to me just compounds that fundamental problem. The other thing that's important, I think, in kind of the grand scheme is there's been a lot of talk about affordability. The budget is increased up to $167 million or something like that. The council has talked about wanting to make the project affordable, but they're still basically supporting the original goals, which was, you know, I'd love to have this and I'd love to have that. So that's where the $167 million came from, is the goals that the city set 4 or 5 years ago. The result is, in going through this RFP, we've asked about a project description, and the closest thing that I can find is the what's called the performance criteria report, which is a term, frankly, I haven't seen in my career of over 40 years. Not quite sure what that is, but I read it. That's attachment A. To me, that's the most important part to read. And if you read it several times, you'll recognize it as alternate 3 or alternate 4, which is the $167 million project with injection of the waste into the ground, running wastewater over to wells. It's a very general, vague description. As a contractor, I don't know how I would even bid it, but to me, you need a base project here that's clear and simple and well-defined, which to me is alternate 1, an MBR plant, tertiary treatment, that's it. That's what should go in the RFP. And then these other upgrades, I'll call them, should be put in as bid alternates and defined more clearly so that a contractor could actually bid them. I'm a huge company and I'm bidding this stuff and the information's too general or hard to put a number to it. I'm going to guess what it is and I'm going to multiply times 2 or 3. And all these contractors will do that. So your bids are going to come in inflated because the information is not organized well. Some of it's very specific. Some of it's very general. The other thing is the system is going to be sized on a number of different flow information. We have leaks in the collection system, so I consider all the flow numbers and all the reports to be suspect, shall I say. And those flow numbers need to be confirmed by fixing major leaks in pipes and then monitoring those flows, and then that'll become the basis for sizing of the plant. The 0.97 million gallons per day for the average annual daily flow is a number that keeps showing up. Just look at Los Osos to see the problems they had with overcalculating the demand on their plant. It's half used. The 0.097 MGD, which is in this request for proposal, does not take into account that Cayucas will be coming offline in 18 months and 25% of that flow will be gone. Does not take into account that as soon as rates go up, the use of water and consequently waste is going to go down, which it has in Los Osos. So the numbers in terms of sizing of the plant are completely out of whack, in my opinion. They need to be developed by repairing your pipes that are leaking, doing more testing, and calculate Cayucas coming offline, 25% of the flow. How can that not be in this number? It's going to drive the price
up. Can you wrap it up, please?
Sure. One last thing. I think it's a big mistake for the city to split the lift station and the piping offsite work from the other bulk of the project, because the benefit of design build is you have one point of contact, one source of liability if you have any problem in the future. Typically, so you have a problem, you call the contractor. Contractor says, I built it just the way the architect designed it. You call the architect, say, I designed it right. The contractor didn't build it right. That is the classic conflict. That's why design build came out. You have one legal entity, so you make one phone call. And you don't care whose mistake it is, fix it. So you've split out a major part of the system from the other part of the system. When you get that phone call, who are you going to call?
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Joe, could you please clarify again whether or not this 0.97 includes Cayucas or not?
It does not include Cayucas. Cayucas has been taken out of that figure.
Hey, I got a question for you, Joe.
If that is, doesn't include Cayucas, does it include Cayucas's INI that is part of their in the North Main Street issue? And does it also include the one of the issues is part of the problem that is being specified here is the flow data that Mr. Nunley is based on going back to 1995. Now, you weren't here, but in 2001, in August, the flow meter at the wastewater treatment plant was replaced because it was found erroneous data was given. Now, in 2003, I did a flow study in Cayucas, and erroneous data prior to 2003 was given. So having basing your flow data and averaging erroneous data tends to color and skew the actual flows.
The flows that we're using, that 0.97, actually takes out Cayucas' flows, which include INI. Those numbers are coming directly from Cayucas, so you probably know better than anyone the accuracy of those values. So they are actually, every month, Cayucas reports to us what their flows are. So that is what we have used to remove from our flow calculations.
Yeah, but they don't take into account the INI downstream of their lift station, and that INI that's coming down Main Street is not calculated. It's charged to the citizens of Morro Bay.
They won't be using the Main Street, the jointly owned line. They're going to be basically a force main down their solely owned line to the outfall. So they won't be using the jointly owned line anymore. It probably won't be a jointly owned line anymore.
Yeah, they haven't used a jointly owned line for years. It hasn't been used. That's been valved off.
Right.
Okay.
It's probably
now,
physically impossible.
The line I'm talking about is the one that they're going to be using is the dedicated sewer line, the 17-inch main line that's coming down Main Street. Now, the jointly owned line, the 60-40 line, it has its other issues.
Right.
And those are being calculated. But I'm talking about that line right there. When you're calculating your flows, okay, when the flows were being calculated, that infiltration from downstream of lift station 5, that hasn't been calculated, that infiltration.
It's a force main.
That goes to gravity.
But it's their effluent line. It'll be tied in directly to the outfall. There won't be any.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the infiltration at this time isn't calculated, isn't addressed, okay? That's the point. The point is you're.
We agree that for the most part that is a force main. Granted, there is a very small section of it that does turn to gravity, and there is an opportunity for some INI in that area, but we do believe that it's very minimal.
That small section goes from Yerba Buena all the way to the plant.
Okay. I mean, are we done, or maybe you guys offline can want to make sure, you know, we're communicating. Okay. We're still on public comment. Barry, welcome.
Good afternoon. Barry Brandon, Morro Bay. This flow information is kind of hard to find, so all I could do is research the report that comes out every year, and I have a copy of the front page here. I have a copy of the entire report, and I wonder if someone could tell me. The report is dated 2016, and in the report for 2016, it gave the flow, minimum gallons flow, for the last 20 years since 1986. And this report shows for 2016 that the flow was 0.84, and it shows that 2015 it was 0.93. But this flow is the total flow of the plant. This is what the total flow of the plant. And in the report that I couldn't find it, and I'd be more than happy to look for it, I couldn't find where a Cayucas number was taken out. So that question that was asked, I know it was taken out, but I would like to have someone point us to where you can show us that takeout, because It's not showing up in any records that I can find. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry.
Maybe we finish public comment first before we start the back and forth?
Yeah. Okay. Trying to be a little informal, but I don't need the slips or know how many people are commenting. Welcome, sir.
Tom Rost, Morro Bay. I think you're making it a grievous error by splitting your force main and your lift station. You already have three lift stations in this town. Someplace along the line, you need to integrate that with wherever the plant's going to be it South Bay Boulevard, or if it's going to remain where it is, then it's already integrated. But if it's going to go to South Bay, then you've got to figure out and look at the system you already have, which I've not, in all of this public comments and from your consultants, heard them say anything about having studied what you have and how you could change it to get to South Bay without doing some piping. In other words, it could alleviate some of the piping. So I think you're way ahead of the power curve. I think you need somebody that is going to come in and really study this and integrate your contract so that you don't have a lot of contractors. You need one contractor to design a cookie cutter, put it in place, includes all the mains, all the piping, one payment. And I've been saying that for a long time. I think Heller has been trying to say that to you. I think Brannon's tried to say that to you. I think Beckman's tried to say that to you. So discount what I've said. But think about what these other gentlemen have said. They've built these plants, not these plants, but built projects in this community. They know what they're talking about. So you need to back up and not have all of this split design work and split contractors. You need one contractor, one bid, and you need to lower your qualifications so that you get the little guys. The little guys need work too. And as Mr. Heller said to you, you've got four huge companies. You need to rethink this quite a bit. And you started that last week, and I hope you continue it. And the council listened to you yesterday. So you're making progress. I commend you.
Thank you.
Hi again, Nancy Bass, Morro Bay. It was mentioned at the council meeting the other night about the actual property where the plant will be built. And I would like to know just what the processes are that the city will have to go through to make that property truly available for a plant to be built. It was talked about the county wanting it to be annexed. We have an initiative on the ballot, in our laws that said any annexation will have to go to the people for a vote. And so please go through the whole process that will make that building there possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy.
Bart Beckman again. I won't repeat what I said earlier. I'd like to comment on the evaluation. I made some comments earlier that because there wasn't an option for reviewing it, that I said basically someone could come in with a plant half the cost and lose. I totally agree with Mr. Shively. you nailed it. There's no question but that you are absolutely right. Sorry, Barbara. As much as I'd love to say that cost and schedule controls are the most important thing in the world, because that's what I did for 40 years, you are absolutely right. The statement of qualifications basically said, do they have the first, I don't know, seven, what are those numbers? So basically, you shouldn't be bidding if you didn't fundamentally have those. So your bid now, your evaluation, it might be a little bit of that, maybe the 10% that you were suggesting, I could go along with that. But performance guarantees and the cost is really what you're evaluating at this point. So this doesn't make sense. The other thing I would caution you on, Scott, I would suggest you get some legal counsel on what Mr. Leivik was suggesting earlier. He basically was saying and implying that if a bid comes in and it's not quite there for management, well, we can sort of jury-rig the thing and we'll give them some more points. That's what was said. That's what was said. What was said was you can sort of change it around. That's, if we replay the tape if you want, but once you set the criteria, that's it. Now, if you're within a point, you probably got to go adjust your points. But that's what was said. That's what I heard, was that it was very flexible after you went out. At this point, it's flexible. Once you fix it, it's set. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart.
Can I respond to that? Sorry. So I think what Rob was saying is if you did a pass-fail on any of those criteria, you could lose a bidder on a PF system. And what he was saying is if somebody scored poorly on management approach but did exceedingly well on the price proposal, we would probably want that bidder to still be involved. It's not going to go back and say, fix your management approach. It's like, can we live with their less than adequate or less than ideal management approach? That's what Robin, that's how I interpreted his remark, and I'll make sure that's what you meant.
That's correct.
Thanks, Rob. And I agree with that, and that's why we're trying to adjust the cost up so that you don't even have that situation in the first place. But you're absolutely right. And Bart, I think just for clarification, I was saying 54% for two things, the schedule and cost control and the total life cycle cost price proposal. You could, but all of us, we can discuss this up here. I just threw something out because I'd like to give them something in writing that says, hey, here's what we think. If we want to take that up to 80-90% on one item alone and 1% on every other or whatever, I'm fine with that. We can come up with some compromise.
The one thing I'm not sure of, like I said, I've dealt with a lot of design, bid, build, and it's the lowest responsible bidder. I do not know design build, so in all fairness, I defer to staff that they say you can take those other qualifications into account. And I agree from the standpoint that you don't want the lowest bidder if he's $100 less and he's failing on a lot of other areas, and I would tend to agree with that. However, when a contractor comes in, and I don't care what anybody thinks about, when you have a design build, the design part's a pretty small portion of the overall cost, and you got the contractor forces in place that they say, gee, if I came in with the lowest bid and I met all their requirements, you're going to have a lawsuit if theirs gets thrown out because they spent a lot of money trying to throw these things together. That's the part I don't know. But if you say the state allows that in a design-build process, that's fine. But it just, in my mind, that was the red flag when I first read this and why I threw it out there in the first place. Thanks.
So maybe I could use an opposite example to help clarify things. You could structure this so that the cost was the lowest possible rating. If you wanted, let's say, design, development, and management was the ultimate importance to the city, you could make that 90% and everything else low with this design build. I'm not hearing that from this board nor the community that that's the way we want to structure this design build process, that price proposal and life cycle cost maybe the most important thing with this project.
And that's what we're saying, I think, up here. It's just a matter. It's probably relativity,
that's where I stand,
whether it's 60% or 80 or 90, just whatever it is. We want more than 50. I think we're all in agreement on that. So go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
Larry Truesdale, resident of Morro Bay.
Larry.
I've been sitting and listening for quite a while, and I get the impression that this proposal you're talking about putting out is dead in the water before it's even sent. And it's a shame arguing about things that are not likely to ever get support of the community. And you'll have to have that sooner or later. You have four people bidding between $150 million and $170 million, round numbers. And you've had several council members saying, we're thinking it will come down to maybe 70. That's a huge difference. And if it's going to be down in that range, the community will support. You got to enable in your descriptions of what you're looking for contractors who can bid in that range. And we've had people come in at 50 and were rejected because they didn't meet the basic requirements. This is a waste of time because in the end, you're not going to get the money from the citizens. They will vote it down. There's a variety. You cannot re-engineer the city where 25 to 30% will be forced to leave so you can put in this Cadillac model. It's time to go back and say, let's not send this out. Let's get it written right so we can get people proposing the right cost. Quit spinning your wheels. Time is money. And we hear that over and over. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Kerrigan Mahan, Morro Bay. Once again, I actually, as opposed to Beckman, I will be redundant. The project should be stopped. I can't get into the weeds with the technical, and I won't try. You're hearing very knowledgeable people here. Barry Brannon, Jeff Heller, Beckman. I mean, this is in my business, and the only way I can make any sense of it is thus. You're trying to go into production. You have no cast. You have no crew. You're not even... this is the way we talk before we go into pre-production. You have no director. You have a script that is so full of holes, it's embarrassing. This project needs the plug pulled right now. And if I were a studio head and it was a film, you're way over budget. You're not ready to go on any level. This is listening to this mumbo jumbo for the last hour. And again, another fancy, very expensive coloring book that $15 an hour people made and put all this together, and God knows again what we were charged for it, but we keep on going. No, we're not making progress. It's slow and stupid and should be shut down. This is out of control.
Thank you.
Yes, I forbid the exhibits.
Any further public comment, please?
Good afternoon, members of WRFCAC. Tina Metzger, resident of Morro Bay. I have a few questions for Mike Nunley. If he could answer these, I would appreciate it. Was the lift station and the piping to the sewage plant site in the WRF project description at the scoping hearing in July of 26? Can you give us a description of the project that is easily understood to the layperson, or are we still working on what that project description really is? Would you tell us what the facilities are that the draft EIR is going to be covering? Will it include facilities such as desal plant, administration building, courtyard? The regular person out there on the street wants to know what the project description is, and we don't need to have the really deep details of the sewage plant itself. And is the EIR or the draft EIR consultant working with a fluid project description right now, and they're trying to grapple with that in their anticipated publication of the draft EIR? I'd like answers to these questions, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Any other public comment?
My name is Mark Hansen. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. I originally moved here from Los Osos to escape the most expensive per capita municipal project in the history of mankind, to now be facing the second most expensive per capita municipal project in the history of mankind. I absolutely see no reason why the South Bay Boulevard site is still even on the table. I'm sorry, but there's absolutely no reason for the facility to be moved from its current location. It's been there for apparently 64 years, 1954. Working well. This entire left-wing nonsense from Jamie Irons about a potential 100-year flood of biblical proportions or a 50-foot tsunami that could inundate the facility where it's at is absurd and ridiculous left-wing nonsense. It's almost laughable. If somebody wants to build a berm around the current facility and upgrade it, or build a new facility at the current location, apparently there's plenty of room with the Hanson concrete plant area and the equipment yard area together are larger than what the current space of the current sewer plant is right now. So there's absolutely no reason to move the plant from its current location. It would be perfectly safe there. If they want to build a berm around it, fine, to appease the left-wing extremists. I'm all for discharging the treated water on land rather than out to the ocean, because I know the valuable commodity that water is in this state when we go through 4 or 5 years of drought. I'd love to see it emptied in our own aquifer, or to the east of the farmers, or even more so to the south, to Los Osos, because their aquifer has been dying for years. It's going down and down. It's got saltwater intrusion and nitrates, and if the Water Quality Control Board and the state really cares about the value of water, you'd think they would be willing to help pay to send it south to Los Osos. Or there's been a proposal to send it north to the Whale Rock Reservoir to hold it there during times of drought and share it with Cayugas, but I'd like to see the water remain on the land and not go out to the ocean, because it's too valuable of a commodity for our state. But again, there's absolutely no reason I can think of to move that facility from its current location. That footprint's been established. It's been working there for 64 years. It could work there for another 64 years. It's just a matter of whether you spend the money to upgrade it or build a new facility that meets the current technological standards. But it should remain there. I want to see it remain there.
Thank you, Mark, and thanks for signing in. Any other public comment? Okay, I'll close public comment. Thank you all. Rob or Joe, would you care? Is anything you want to comment on? Scott, any of you?
So there were questions regarding the flow.
Mm-hmm.
The flow was based on Morro Bay's flow alone, subtracting out Cayucas, and not assuming that we will have the lowest flow on record from now until forever. There was almost no rainfall in that 2016 amount. We will have infiltration, water coming into our lines. It's probably not feasible to repair 60 miles of sewer line, 1,100 plus manholes, 5,000 plus connections to eliminate all of the INI. We need to address that in some form. We will continue to work on INI reduction, but it's probably not feasible to assume that it will all go away unless it stops raining forever. We're hoping that that doesn't happen. Cayuga flows, as I said before, were not included in that. Also, what was included in that was this plant needs to last more than just for the current population in Morro Bay. It is sized to accommodate, in 2040, a population of 12,000 folks. So that's how the flow numbers were determined. Those flow numbers have been verified more recently with some flow monitoring by V&A Engineering as part of the One Water Plan, coming up with the same answers that Black & Veatch came up with in the Facilities Master Plan. All of this is in the flow and load section of the Facilities Master Plan and a technical memo that was discussed at WRFCAC probably in 2015 when we went in detail over flow and loads, and both those documents are on the web for folks' review. Splitting up the project or the program into two projects is based on the kind of the linear nature of a pipeline project in Forest Main versus a site project of the WRF facility. And there are local contractors of sufficient size that could compete. We're talking smaller contractors can compete and have experience building lift stations in Forest Mains. Additionally, the lift station designer has not picked the ultimate alignment for the force main. So as Mr. Donnelly pointed out, there's some borings going on right now that it will all feed into that design, which will feed back into the environmental document to select that final location and alignment for the force main. So that design information has to inform the environmental document. Excuse me, I'm just reviewing my notes.
Oh, that's okay.
Ms. Bass talked about how the property needs to be acquired. So we have a memorandum of agreement with the property owner, or memorandum of understanding, regarding that the city will purchase that at the proper time. So we've been advised by our legal counsel not to actually purchase the property until the environmental document is complete. Once that document is complete, there will be an appraisal and a negotiated price for that property. We likely will not pay more than appraised value. I think anything above 10% above appraised value, the courts have determined that's a gift of public funds, and you really can't do that. As far as annexation goes, talking with LAFCO and the county, they would prefer that the property be annexed prior to building permits being issued for the WRF project on the site. The county doesn't have a problem with working on the land use entitlements, but really doesn't want to get into the details of the building permit. There is a measure on the books that require a vote of the population for annexations, except for properties used for public purposes. So this doesn't require that public vote to annex that property.
When they appraise the property, it'll be appraised county property, not annexed. And
yes.
So, I mean, you know, they look at height. Property one.
It's agriculture, but in the county, wastewater treatment plants are allowed on agriculturally zoned.
I just wanted to make sure the appraisal wasn't after it gets annexed into the city where there might be a higher or better use.
I don't think the zoning would allow a higher or better use. Okay. We're not going to zone it for commercial purposes or...
You answered my question.
Okay.
Thank you.
A simple project description. There is a project description in the performance specifications. Also, maybe I'll just give you what my understanding of the project is. Overall, what the whole project is. It's a project to build an advanced wastewater treatment plant. So full tertiary, advanced treatment, which includes RO and advanced oxidation processes at the South Bay Boulevard site, a lift station near the existing wastewater treatment plant, a force main to get the wastewater up to the plant, a brine line to discharge the brine to the outfall and wet weather flows to the outfall, ultimately a reclaim water line that will distribute water to injection wells to recharge the Morrow aquifer. That's the project that we're proceeding forward with based on council direction and meeting the community goals. That project yields a estimated $150 million project cost, including contingencies. So I have to say that. I think I got everything. Yeah, lift station was included in the discussion at the scoping meeting. Now, at the scoping meeting, the site that we were looking at was in the Morrow Valley, not the at the South Bay Boulevard site, but we still needed a lift station, force mains to get there. The ultimate project description for environmental review isn't required until the draft EIR is published, so that will occur in the draft EIR. What facilities are included in the DIR? No corp yard. Council made it clear that they didn't want a corp yard there. There will need to be an operations building, a maintenance shop there, parking for the city vehicles that need to park there. So that's basically what's included in there. It'll include all the operations for the staff, water and wastewater operations staff that will need to work at that facility. The existing city desal is not part of this project. Coastal has said that if there is a major upgrade in our most current permit from Coastal, if there is a major upgrade for that desal facility, they will look for us to relocate that facility. We're not proposing that project at this time. Why South Bay Boulevard? Why not the existing site? That is a decision that was made through a public process by our city council. It was informed by correspondence from Coastal Commission staff that discourage us relooking at the existing site. I'll paraphrase what Dan Carl, the deputy executive director, told me. He asked me how long it took us to go from a substantial issues hearing to a denial permit at the on the former project that was we went to hearing in 2013, and I told him I thought it was about 2 years, and he asked me why I would expect anything different to occur with this project. So staff cannot say that Coastal Commission would deny a project, nor would they tell us not to propose a reconstruction of a project at the existing site. What they told us was, it will probably take us 2 years to get to a hearing on that project. Time is not our friend if we're looking at the project that has been moved forward by the City Council. We need subsidized government funding to make this work. In addition to subsidized government funding, we need as much grant funding as we can, and we need low bids on the project. So time is not our friend, and delays are not our friend.
Rob, I'm sorry, do you have any other comments for that?
Just in addition to that, as many may recall, the executive officer and the chair of the regional board appeared at a city council meeting, encouraging us to move forward as quickly as possible and telling us that doing the minimum requirements and discharging to the ocean with a facility at the existing plant would not garner their support for subsidized funding. I think that answers most, if not all, of the questions.
Yeah, well, the regional board also was referring to moving and looking at the Hansen site, and the Morro Bay City's council reaction to that was to cancel all our WRFCAC meetings and then actually making a public statement. One of the city council people made a public statement that they never even would consider anything west of Highway 1 as far as a WRF. So I think that that was kind of taken out of context.
Oh, I'm sorry. To put on the website an FAQ of frequently asked questions, because I've heard these same questions probably at the last three or four meetings, and I know it's buried in there somewhere, and I've heard you explain it before, but I still see a lot of people coming in a little bit misinformed. You know, you got 6 minutes of this meeting, you know, the description.
Your mic is shot.
Yeah, it's not working. In any case, usually people hear my voice even without a microphone, but in either case, I think there is a little bit of a lack of connect with some of the things you brought up before, and I, especially in the talk about the flows and how we get there, because all of a sudden the numbers come back pretty close to what you're seeing now with Cayucas, and I think that's where a lot of the confusion reigns. And I do like to remind people that when you design a wastewater plant, it can't work 95% of the time. If we get an unusually wet year where you have a lot of INI, you got to deal with that. You can't have it breaking down 5% of the time. That's unacceptable. And to me, when they tie it to Los Osos, it always bothers me because they had no previous flows in order to calculate how big of a plant they needed. They had a guesstimate here. We do have accurate readings going back a number of years, and I know you went back in time because that's when the wet weather years were, and you were trying to tie that into your calculation. But I think if you get it out there a little better, maybe on the website or maybe even a flyer in your water and sewer bill of frequently asked questions, it may allay some of that. That'd be my recommendation on that point.
Getting back to the project description, it's my understanding that if we want to pursue the loans we're looking at with SRF and WIFIA, that it has to include all the elements you just described. Is that correct?
With WIFIA, they made their selection based on what we told them that we were proposing to do. They liked the innovative groundwater recharge component of the project. That's how we made the cut. At least has to include that.
they were less concerned of the location of the site than Coastal is. And then Regional Board, while they're not the ultimate funding authority, they have influence over their brothers and sisters at the State Board, who is the ultimate funding authority.
Back early on, we were talking phase one, phase two, so that's gone away. It all has to be one project, as we've described, correct?
That's what we've been told.
Okay.
And Rob, just real quick, on the flows that we keep hearing about, which were recently confirmed, we talked about that last week with the B&A and the Black & Veatch. These are professional firms that, correct, have a responsibility. If these numbers are way off and we're using them, don't we have recourse?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
I have looked at the calculations and the flow numbers as using their calibration that they're using. I cannot find anything in error with what the procedures that they're using and the flow determinations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. And I agree because, well, in this RFP, it said the plant is being built for a useful life of 30 years, but in the reality, we expect it to last long. I mean, the current one obviously is 63 and some months, correct?
Correct.
So, and I know the population isn't, you know, what it's the 12,300. That's the city council did a resolution. So I think we're confusing ourselves if we're taking the lowest year on record and trying to project that out 50 years as an average.
And again, just one more thing on average flows. You don't use average flow a lot in design of a wastewater treatment plant. You just design different processes based on different flow regimes. The average flow is a nameplate for the plant. It's used to come up with comparative costs for operational costs, chemical usage. It's what the regional board will call the plant. They'll call it a 0.7 MGD plant for the nameplate. But we will size various components based on the flows that we would expect to receive there. For example, you know, the EQ basin, the equalization, we want to size that for peak hour. You know, solids handling might be max month. You know, the biological treatment will be sized not so much based on flow, but mass loading, the amount of, you know, solids that are coming into the plant. So it's not just one number that will be used to design a wastewater facility.
Maybe we should get to the matter at hand. The slide that's up before us right now, I guess you want some feedback as far as the items included in the numbers. You have an item number 3 up there, schedule and cost controls weighted at 15. But down a little bit further, you have project scheduling and sequencing at 5. I brought up earlier the project, the management approach. The first one maybe should have a higher weighting. It seems to me we can eliminate the scheduling and sequencing item altogether. Put that 5 up with the mitigation approach and make that a 10. If everybody's agreeable with that. I know Barbara wanted to rearrange a couple numbers, but it seems to me that's something that we can simply eliminate. It's already covered in one item and put that 5 up in management approach. That's my idea.
If you're looking for the comments, and I think I've been trying to clear. I'd love to.
Oh, the mic.
Is it not working? Oh, there we go. Sorry. I'd just like to see the other one. Hello? There we
it's
go.
That cat.
He doesn't want to hear me anymore, I'm sure of that. No, at the end of the day, for me personally, I'd like to see the price proposal and life cycle cost being absolutely the largest percentage of this. Because, I think most of these contractors that you've lined up to be here can handle most of those other matters. Thank you.
So do we need to give you a number, or what do you look at? I mean,
we would take a number, or we can just go with the general sentiment, yeah. And maybe I could reiterate what I'm hearing, that cost is the most important value, and cost control should exceed 50% of the value of the rating criteria.
Or maybe let's go with a range, so because I was something like 60 to 80%, and then the rest of them will rely on your
if you're looking. I'm sorry, if you're looking for a range, I would say at least on that last line item about 60%, and how you work it out through the other ones. To me, you know, like I say, most of the other ones, to me, I think you're probably going to get with the contractors you have lined up right now.
I'm okay with that. The rest of you guys, okay? 60% or higher on the price proposal, yeah. And the rest will defer to your professional
opinion. Should there be two contractors that bid the same amount, we'll use the other items to screen them. Is really
honestly
what
that's
exactly
yeah.
It gets
okay.
Back to that lowest responsible
yeah.
bidder, you know.
Yeah.
And I know that design builds don't come down that way. I learned it tonight, but it.
I'm gonna make a comment.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Any other comments?
Yeah, I want to comment just to put into the record that I believe that this proposal needs to be. Null and void, and we revisit the approach.
So you and please convey that to council as well. I'm sorry.
I don't think this requires a vote.
No,
it's
it doesn't.
Comments,
I'm just saying,
so
I want to make sure that, yeah. I don't think we're all
it doesn't it. Require a vote because we're taking your comments and
yeah,
forwarding
right.
them all to City Council.
I had one more thing I wanted to talk about in the proposal. You refer to the design build entity as DBE, but to me, in a federally funded project, that's disadvantaged business enterprise, which I didn't see any mention of that in here at all. We're expecting to get federal funding, so we need to let our proposers know that they have to comply with these federal regulations if we get that loan. And we have to meet the goal. I think the city has specified a goal of meeting disadvantaged business enterprises, or at least a good faith effort in getting that number. So I don't know if you were going to include it in the contract some way about the mention of the federal involvement and the DBE, Buy America clauses, all that sort of stuff that comes with the federal.
Yeah, there's federal cross cutters that we have to put in the document, including the disadvantaged business enterprise, the American Steel, Steel and Iron clause. We had a conference call with SRF and with EPA, and they gave us the boilerplate information, but it was after publication of the. So what they'll require, not just reference to it, but the actual federal cross-cutter documents to be included in the RFP, and then an update, an addendum update, I think 10 days prior to the bid opening, that include the most recent Davis-Bacon prevailing wage numbers.
Sorry, are you still looking for other comments? I have a couple of little comments on the RFP. Or were you finished? I didn't mean to cut you off.
We have a couple of other topics to just address lightly. We have the allowance section, and just to go over the we went over this last week, but just to briefly address the technical proposal, we've kind of talked about that an awful lot so far, and maybe we since we've already really addressed the technical proposal, the next section really should be the allowances, and we if we get some comments on that, we can bring those that information forward to City Council.
Sure, proceed.
So allowances. As you know, we are proceeding with maximum speed on this project. So that means we will not have the completed environmental document done prior to releasing the RFP. We will have it done before we award a contract, but not before releasing the RFP. So we need to identify allowances in the RFP to allocate risk appropriately and to reduce the costs that we can see. So one of the ways to do that is to put an allowance for environmental mitigation and unforeseen conditions and set that at $1 million. Give the contractors that price. That's what they, for example, we do it a lot with traffic control. You can only bid $25,000 on traffic control. That's what we're going to allow for that. This is what we're going to do for mitigation. We've had conversations with our EIR consultant. They believe this is an appropriate number. That number will be under the control of the city, not under the control of the contractor. So they have to show us why they need to tap into that allowance. And I'll bring Mike up to expand on that if he has anything more to add on allowances.
Hey, Rob. I'm have to leave here in about 5 minutes, and we won't have a quorum. Is there anything else that we need to discuss where a quorum's needed in this particular
case? There's no vote required on this, so we can...
You may see me duck out here in a few minutes.
It just converts to a workshop.
It converts to a workshop at that point.
Thanks, Steve. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. The only comment I'd like to add is this includes unanticipated mitigation measures. And what we've done is worked with the EIR team at ESA and also with John Rickenbach to determine what are likely mitigation measures that will be required for the South Bay Boulevard site. We know a lot from the cultural resource studies and biological studies that have already been done. And so we've already identified what those likely mitigation measures are. They're to be included in the design builder's proposals apart from this unanticipated mitigation allowance. So we've tried to identify the mitigation measures as we would expect. Things like the design builder will have to submit a liquefaction analysis. They'll have to submit different types of geologic reports. And we've identified those items as mitigation measures that they have to bid on. These are for the unanticipated, the things we can't anticipate right now.
Does that include things that may occur during construction, and it would be used to avoid a delay claim by the contractor?
That's correct. There's no limitation on when, there's no time limitation on when this could be used. It could apply to construction phase. It could apply to other permits that could come up, between the design and permitting phases.
$1 million seems like an awful lot of money. How did you arrive at that figure?
So, again, that was with consultation with ESA and also with John Rickenbach. The objective is to put an allowance in there that's fairly conservative, but the contractor has to submit a detailed estimate as to what they would need, and it's something we all have to agree to before they get awarded that part of the work. For example, let's say if one of the mitigation or monitoring requirements might be some particular type of monitor or observer during some phase of construction for some biological resource that maybe wasn't identified when this work was done. The city may opt to just pay that direct and not even do that, give that to the contractor. That's why when we say it's the city's money, it's the city has control over that, and they may opt not to even use the contractor to do that.
Does it include legal fees? Like, for instance, we kind of referenced going back a few years when Black & Veatch was here. I asked them how they plan on mitigating the greenhouse gases with, being that we're in California and AB 32 and then Senate bill. I can't remember the number, but it's been upped. So is that going to be part of that mitigation is that $1 million for that?
No legal fees would be included in a.
So that would be extra?
I'm not clear on why legal fees would be required for greenhouse gas compliance for the EIR. I would say if there was a legal challenge to, if the question is if there's a legal challenge to the EIR, well, the city is, that would be, as the owner of the project and his lead agency, that would be the city's.
So the city, basically, city attorney would be, the citizens of Morro Bay will be paying for that, right? Because paying through the city attorney. Right, not the county, even though the county's in charge of the permitting process, we're paying for the legal fees there.
Depends on, I guess it depends on what the litigation is over or about. I couldn't speak to who would pay for the litigation.
Well, okay, so who would know that?
Well, I don't, greenhouse gas emission doesn't involve litigation. Greenhouse gas analysis in an EIR doesn't. So I guess I'm not clear where the litigation would come in.
Well, let's say that somebody sues over the EIR. That lawsuit has to be brought forward within 30 days of council certification of that document. If that were to occur, we would not issue a construction contract to the contractor. So we wouldn't have a contractor on board. And the goal with the environmental document is to create a EIR that addresses the, basically to have a litigation proof EIR. Now, you can't guarantee, people can sue over anything that they want to, but the goal is to have everything addressed in the EIR as possible.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I mentioned something about the mitigation. It says under proposed allowances, it says anticipated.
Could you pull your mic down?
Anticipated mitigation measures are provided in the RFP and must be accounted for in proposed price. I'm not going to go through it, but I have a little over a page of concerns that I have in regards to the mitigation measures that are included in the RFP, primarily dealing with the cultural resources. And the biological and wetland and riparian resources they're thorough, and it's obvious that you have a specialist on board who wrote that particular section. One caveat I would make, though, that all measures need to be reviewed for potential impacts to other resources. For example, the compensatory mitigation measures identified in the habitat mitigation monitoring plan for impacts to wetland riparian areas could have impacts to cultural resources and vice versa, depending upon what the archaeologists are doing out there. I'm not going to go into all of this, but the main gist of what I'm saying in this, and I'll email it to you, is that what you are calling mitigation measures for cultural resources are actually things that should be done during the environmental phase. It's part of the identification and determining whether or not you have sensitive resources out there, and they're not mitigation measures. And so I discussed that. And the other thing that I want to point out in regards to the Public Resources Code, you mentioned that the county is responsible for 5097.98, 5097.99. It's actually the city's responsibility to take care of that code.
Okay.
And then the fourth mitigation measures, you referred to fossil fines as cultural resources. They are not. This section should be placed under a heading titled Paleontological Resources. But the gist of what I have to say in regards to archaeology and cultural resources is that what is listed in there, those are not mitigation measures. Those are studies that need to be conducted during the EIR phase. If things are going to be deferred to a later stage in the project for various reasons, that's discussed in some sort of programmatic agreement or some sort of agreement document, and that's developed in consultation with agency. the city and representatives from the Native American community, and I don't see any of that in there. So anyway, I just want to mention that, my concerns, and I'll email that to you tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Val. Okay. So on allowance, are we in agreement that based on their input from the technical personnel that that is acceptable? We don't have any alternative to suggest or for lowering that, do we? Okay. All right, so we don't have any specific recommendation to change that is what we're saying.
I think, well, for one thing, the wastewater reclamation facility site, for like particularly for cultural resources and what have you, and even for some of the biological, that seems to be a fairly okay site. But where you're going to be running into problems are with the pipeline,
Yes,
and
definitely.
You may have a number of unanticipated fines, fines, as well as a result of there are sensitive areas, and you may inadvertently affect those sensitive areas during the construction process. And so $1 million is probably not, I mean, to have that nest egg is probably not too much money. So it's better to have the money dedicated. And if you're also talking about it, though, would this also be for geotechnical issues? Because at the particular wharf site, or is this just specifically for all resources, whether it's air, noise, cultural biology, what have you?
All resources, but the contractor will be required to perform their own geotechnical evaluation
I heard somebody mention geotechnical, and I go, well, I thought they were handling their own work.
Yeah, so they will handle their own geotech work. We've provided a geotechnical baseline report, and the purpose of that is to give them information for developing their proposals. But that's correct. And their mitigation measures will be built into their design. It's foundation design and other things that are addressed in the performance criteria report.
Okay. Rob, do you have anything else?
That's it. I just want to point out that this document is available on the city's program website, and there's a link to the city website, so you can get to that. Morrobaywharf.com is the project program website. It's on the front page of that. Well, there's a link to this document here. Oh, this one here. So it's available, and we'll be discussing this with City Council next Wednesday in workshop format, and looking for Council to approve and release the document on the 23rd.
Okay. And can I make a few other quick comments?
Sure.
If you need me to send them in writing. Okay, thanks. I did notice, I was going to ask you, if there was a clause in there about if you're storing materials, you'll have to make payment for them either at the site or instead of just paying for them when they're delivered or put in use. Is that standard in these kind of contracts?
I think that's open to the way we write that.
Okay.
So typically we do pay for stored materials.
Okay. Just want to make sure. The other thing is on section page 6-13, it had about the cost savings. You know, if they come back with an alternative and we would share in the cost savings. I think it was on page 44 of 81. And it said may share or will share. So it looked like that could have been from a template. I would maybe check that reference.
Okay.
It's one or the other. But the thought I had on that or the concern could be, does this give any supplier an incentive not to respond back immediately with some cost savings and then try to implement them later to get, you know, to share some of that savings? Or
typically not, because it's a competitive
bid process. Okay. So I don't know why you'd hold back on a cost number unless you knew what your competitors were bidding. And
okay.
But I am most familiar with cost savings on highway-type projects.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a value engineering clause. Typically, you share with the contractor 50%. Yeah.
Cost reduction incentive program.
Yeah, exactly.
And also on the material on hand, you pay partial payment, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Paul, for that. And I know last time I talked to you about maybe the burden that you put on some, top of some things. I saw also in here that it said on materials and some other direct things there was no additional markup. It was
right.
just that cost. So that kind of allays my concerns in that area. So I just wanted to pass that on. I noticed it said also, I think it was about 5,500 square feet on the office building, plus they had a 20-25% up to 7,000. So is that is considerably scaled down from what we originally talked to with council? That
yes, because the other functions are not included in the,
okay.
the general fund functions are not included in that ops building.
Okay, thanks. And then also I noticed these asbestos and lead reports in here were dated 2010. Is that current enough? That's not going to give us any issues there?
I believe so, because
okay.
we haven't done anything at
okay.
the
okay.
existing plant to change that.
Okay.
You
Thank
know,
you.
I,
Go ahead, Rich.
Just to be clear, regarding we don't have any permits at this time, correct? And the last time we were here last week, you said that it was your opinion that we didn't need an LCP amendment for land use to put in a lift station. Do we need a? Do you believe that we need a CDP for a lift station there?
Of course.
And a CDP for the Forest Main, or is that going to be one?
I believe we will apply for one CDP that includes that entire project description in it.
Okay.
Okay. Are there any other? I'm sorry. Are there any other comments?
I have some more comments, but I'll just put them in an email, and they address noise and the geotechnical baseline report and the visual and the plantings that are proposed. So
thank you.
Send them in.
On that noise, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 5 days a week, and then Saturday and Sunday, I think it was 8 to 5. That may be acceptable. I think we just need to make sure we communicate that, you know, being that we've had people complaining about street sweepers at 7 a.m., so.
Well, actually, the problem is a little bit deeper than that.
Oh, okay.
There you actually have, under noise and when construction is going to occur, you, under noise control 5.12, item 8, construction, it'll be limited to 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. with exceptions for special accommodations. And so, but you don't specify what the work week is, et cetera. Under Appendix M, mitigation measures, under noise and noise attenuation, the time of construction is different. It is from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. or any day except Saturday or Sunday, or between 8 to 5 p.m. on Saturday or Sunday. So you actually have two different noise.
We'll make sure that's consistent.
Yeah, thanks. Good catch. Okay, so if we have no further comments, then I will, Richard, did you have anything? Okay, then we'll adjourn the meeting to, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, well, that's what I was asking. Yeah, go ahead. Bye.
Yeah, I do have a comment. You know, this has been going on for several years, and I've been on this committee for a long time, and for about 3 years. And, you know, as a planning commissioner, we are held to a bar that's similar to the Morro Bay City Council with regards to our duty of care and in regards to who we represent. And what I've seen in this project, this whole process is, in my opinion, just totally flawed. But more so than the privatization of our public funds, and it's being fleeced out of the city coffers into the private sector,
with these consultants and the biggest companies in the world, like Parsons and everybody bidding, is how it affects our people. And let me tell you the people that you're affecting by doing this. The people that grew up here. I don't know if there's a bunch of people here that actually grew up here, raised their families here, and have grandkids here. But the people that you're affecting are the people that grew up here, people that raised their families here, people that are going to have to reverse mortgage their homes to pay for this monstrosity. You know, I worked in the rocket business, and to me, what we're doing here is, and it might be, the costs are similar. We're building a satellite, and we haven't told the people what orbit we're going to put it in, but we're going to start building a rocket. We don't have the weight of the satellite. We don't have the size of it, but we're going to launch this thing into orbit. And the way I look at it is, recently, the regional board had gave us an NPDES permit. Those NPDES permits are good for 5 years. At the last meeting, while we're at a meeting, our infrastructure, one of the infrastructures was either accidentally or whatever, flushing water that we didn't even know. Had it undermined some sewer lines? I don't know. But at the end of the day, our infrastructure needs to be repaired before we even think about moving a sewer plant and everything else. And we can get our data, our flow data, accurate. Without Cayucas will be gone by then. For the next 5 years, we could start collecting data. We could start collecting accurate INI data. We have totally alleviated or eliminated the fact that we have exfiltrated sewage into the drinking water aquifer. Recently, the Ocean Protection Council yesterday released a note that they are opening projects for grant funding in Prop 84. Our Morro Basin aquifer and our 6040 sewer main is a prime candidate for something like that. And I would like to see the city manager take a look at that. There's a webinar coming up. I had forwarded some information to him. Maybe we can share it. Maybe Gina, I can send it to you, and you can share it with the rest of the council. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Richard. All right, no further comment. I'll adjourn this meeting at 5:14. Our next meeting will be the first regular meeting Tuesday, February 6, 2018. Thank you.
Paul invited me.